Hello and welcome to episode 91 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We can also comment, and you can find links to our social accounts. Plus, if you have any questions or want to comment on the show, you can email us via contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. And if you want an alternative method to listen to this show, you've downloaded it, or you're trying to stream from the website, we're also available on Stitcher and iTunes. But what's happening this week, Paul?
Well, I've got a Ubisoft PR stunt that goes awry. Why did Edgar Wright leave Ant-Man? World War Z sequel script is being worked on. The future's not so bright for future publishing. Six seasons and a movie. Community could return. And our feature for this week is we'll be looking back at the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And obviously when we reach that point, we will obviously tell you, because inevitably there will be spoilers. But first up, we're going to look at this Ubisoft PR stunt down in Australia.
That was clever, this
was so well thought out.
Basically, whoever was doing some PR for Watch Dogs down in Oz decided it would be a great idea to send to a newsroom a safe that had the sound of ticking issuing from it and no note whatsoever as to whom the safe had been sent by. This is a newsroom. It's not uncommon for newsrooms to end up with unpleasant items sent to them.
Are they trying to resurrect Beatles About by any chance?
I'm really not sure. All I know is this is 100% pure idiocy. This is like, it's a newsroom. We get unpleasant mail sometimes. Safe. Ticking. Bomb Squad was called in, obviously. No one from... I believe Ubisoft has quite commented on this yet, or if they have, they haven't said much.
Is there anything you could really say to that, though, apart from, oops?
You say oops. Somebody was being really freaking stupid. Apart from, I think, the news lot involved, which was at 9MSN, or news staff were involved, and they don't even have, like, a gaming segment or section on their website.
Oh, brilliant.
So
they did their research as well then?
Yeah, they really targeted.
So the PR statement from Ubisoft is going to probably go like, well, I'm really sorry about this, but I'm afraid Bill actually got a bit drunk and a bit high on weed that night, and he just put together this whole package before we knew anything about it. He actually got on his bicycle and pedaled all the way to the studio and dropped it off before we could say anything to him, and then he went home.
It sounds quite possibly what could have happened. I would say to any PRs who may or may not be listening, this is a bad example of PR. The fact that Bomb Squad was called in. I mean, we've had some PR stunts which have got people all in a tizzy because there's been various dubious messaging involved. But really what, kind of makes this bad is the fact that actual real law enforcement types had to be called into a location as the result of a PR stunt.
It's crazy because the amount of fear that must have been going through everybody's minds in that studio at the time. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just send Nexus 7s like, they did to that press junket in the States?
Was it in the States? Because it wasn't the people who went to an event in Paris.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. It's somewhere. Somewhere in the world which isn't here.
The galaxy far, far away, they entered the Nexus.
and met Bill Shatner.
And then got a package that was ticking.
And that was stupid.
Oh, no, which was that classic, was it late 80s, early 90s hip-hop?
Will Smith. I was just going to joke that maybe it was Will Smith posting himself to Australia.
Tick, 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 boom. Tick, tick, shake,
Jazzy,
shake the room.
It was with Jazzy Jeff as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff. Yep. Nostalgia.
Had that on vinyl somewhere.
So, I mean, does this top the, what was it, I remember years ago there was a PlayStation one. I think it might have been like God of War or something like that, where they basically had like a party where they actually sacrificed a goat or something like that. Does anybody remember?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. That didn't go down too well.
I'm not surprised, to be honest.
Yeah, it's weird, that, isn't it?
It didn't just go down sort of well with the people who weren't too keen on pagan-esque religions. It didn't go too well with the human rights people either. Not human rights, animal rights.
So now we know where, after they sacked the guy who did that for Sony, he's actually gone to work now.
Because that was in either Greece or America that the whole goats thing happened. It was either Europe or America. So yeah. He had to get all the way to the other side of the world in order to find more PR work.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted to do a PR stunt that went so awry that I'd have to get sent back home.
That's a good point. The dust is probably clear. We're probably the only people that remember the God of Wolves.
No, I'm pretty sure that there'll be a lot of listeners out there that will remember that.
So this is kind of like PR ping pong.
Yes.
So we just have to wait a few years and see if there's a spectacularly bad PR stunt in Russia.
Come on.
Which I don't think anyone would notice because Russia appears to be borderline mental.
That's true.
That's mad. Oh, hang on, it happened in Russia.
Maybe
they got the wrong.
Maybe a PR stunt like this would be acceptable in Russia.
Just in case we've got any Russian listeners, we are joking. We are not serious about this.
Although Putin is mental.
He does spend a lot of time being topless, as far as I can tell, in the media.
But he's definitely not gay. He just likes greasing up and being on.
I'm going to move us all to Ant-Man. I'm not sure if this makes us
before we
better.
Get lawyers involved.
Yeah. For those,
I'm fine. I don't go to sushi outfits.
Oh. For those of you who aren't quite aware, over the last couple of weeks, there's been developments in the Ant-Man film of a rather negative sort. Edgar Wright stepped down from development of Ant-Man.
To be honest,
and being director.
It's actually quite interesting because I swear the amount of news coverage about Edgar Wright leaving Ant-Man is higher than the news coverage about Edgar Wright being, Ant-Man's director. So yeah, I think there's going to be people out there that are like, what? He was going to direct Ant-Man? Oh, that would have been so awesome.
Well, it was not only him, it was Joe Cornish as
well. Yeah, Joe Cornish and him had both worked on the script that had been the proper script for the thing until Marvel went and did something stupid by the looks of things.
Haven't they tried to restructure it to fit in with the rest of the Marvel Universe or something?
Yeah, and make it a far more generalised, film. Comic book movie.
It's called Ant-Man. How general is it going to be?
I mean, bear in mind it had Cornish and Wright both working on it. I suspect that the whole film was far more grey than black and white.
Yep.
So considering a rewrite of that, because they got, two less accomplished writers involved apparently to work on the script.
Yep.
And the suggestion is that the finished product had been very far from Wright's original version, which would also, and the suggestion is that the teeth from the script, from the potential for the film, have been kind of taken away.
Yeah,
which is really bizarre.
This has gone from, I have no idea about it, but it's got them two involved, so I definitely want to see it, to, good move, Marvel. That's the kind of dickery I'm used to from years ago.
Because the thing is that apparently they, especially Wright, was originally brought on because of his slight alter kind of creation process and the way he works on films, is the impact he can have on films.
Oh, yeah.
He originally did some bits to tease how that he would fight in the film and how he'd communicate.
Oh, yeah, they screened stuff at one of the Comic-Cons, last year or the year before last.
And it looked amazing.
Yeah.
From what I saw. And bring him back. Maybe Wally's.
Well, they'd have to basically revert back to one of the previous drafts in order for that to be accomplished.
Can I just say that it's always kind of a warning siren when you have like major parties kind of leave a film, because that happened with World War Z with was it Michael J. Straczynski?
Oh yeah, with the script.
It's still World War Z to me.
But the other thing was, from what I've seen over the weekend, they were in talks with another guy to direct it. And he's now left as well.
Oh, yeah, there's been a couple of people. I mean, was one of them...
And they've both left.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a couple, and they... I do wonder if it's the script or the conditions involved.
To be honest, I reckon
probably both.
Yeah,
I don't understand Marvel's decision to go, okay, well, instead of, you know, keeping Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish happy, who have obviously, you know, had really successful, you know, projects in the past and can, you know, generate a lot of, you know, money, instead they've kind of favoured two less accomplished writers.
Also, yep. The thing is, they've been working on this film since, like, 2006. It's 8 years.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
And that's before the development hell situation that the concept of Ant-Man was in prior to that point.
Yeah.
I mean, what occurs to me is, with them two involved, how much would they have been paid?
Exactly, it's...
And it, weren't the two writers that they sent the script off to get reworked, weren't they in-house Marvel?
They were certainly, the accusation is less accomplished, so that could mean anything, because...
Well, I heard they were in-house, so...
Yeah, you know, but that could also mean people who haven't necessarily worked on film before.
Mm-hmm.
It could be people who've either worked in TV, which actually they've had a lot of TV writers working on the films in the last couple of years, rather than people that are mostly sort of cinema.
It is a bit worrying, because, I mean, they... there's been quite a few rumours over the weekend as well. A lot of people have been pointing out that they are, and we don't know how true it is or not, but there's a lot of rumours circulating that they're actually so annoyed that some guys turned around and said, basically, the Fantastic Four movie coming out.
Mm.
Why are we publicly promoting this with our comic books? And if you look at the Marvel 75 anniversary pictures, there's no Fantastic Four in them. And the rumour is that they're going to start winding down the comics soon as well, until after the movie's been released, just so they don't get the free publicity.
What?
Wow.
And there's also a lot more, certainly where the movie's concerned, a lot more references to the Inhumans, which seem to be their way of getting past the whole X-Men thing with Fox over them.
Who's it? Is it Fox that have got Fantastic Four at the moment?
Yeah, Fantastic Four. They get on better with Sony than Fox, apparently, because Fox basically waited for them to nearly go bankrupt before they'd actually do a deal with the rights, so they got them pretty cheap.
Hmm. Who made the first two Fantastic Four films?
Fox did as well.
Right, because they were shite, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason I think we're getting a reboot of the Fantastic Four now, is because if they don't do it soon, the rights will automatically revert back to Marvel.
They were happy to let Daredevil rights revert back.
Yeah.
So,
who caught the Cornetto thing?
The whole picture thing, but that's gone now, isn't it?
Well, Edgar Wright posted a photo of Buster Keaton, sad Buster Keaton, with a Cornetto.
Yeah.
And a few people responded to that, like Joss Whedon, who's over here filming Avengers at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted a picture of himself holding up a Cornetto in a solidarity. Because of all the people I can think of when it comes to the auteur type person, when it comes to being fucked over by studios, Joss Whedon is high up on the list.
Yeah.
He has a lot of undeserved experience with that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So he'll definitely know what it's like to be working on something for ages and then be kicked off at the last minute.
Hmm.
But like the original Buffy.
I think it's not so that they got kicked off. I think because Wright and Jay Cornish could still have worked on the project, but they apparently didn't agree with the script.
I think it's pretty much the... Yeah, we're not kicking you off. We're just making it intolerable in every single way for you to remain. Yes. You know, he is your thing. Yes, you can do your thing, but you're not getting your script.
If that's... We're
not getting your ideas, and you know we want you to put these things in.
If that's the case, then it's most likely contractual.
I think I'm going to move on to some other movie news, because, you know, movie news.
Yay.
Movie news.
World War Z is on to scripting stage. Zed.
What was that?
Zed. And he's back again.
I just remember, you know, with Power Rangers in like the 90s, they actually said Lord Zed rather than Lord Z, if I remember rightly.
That's because they were sensible.
But in regards to the World War Z script, Stephen Knight of Dirty Pretty Things fame is working on it. The director had already been named in Juan Antonio Bayona, who directed The Impossible.
I'm kind of guessing that he doesn't pronounce his own Bayona surname like that.
I know. And it's because I remember we had a podcast episode last year that was just as the film was coming out. I think we'd either hadn't just seen it yet, but we looked at a Variety article that looked at all the development hell issues that had kind of surfaced and how much it cost, which was in excess of its original budget by over, it was like over $200 million to make, maybe over $220 in the end, or even $250. And it actually turned out it made more than its even rumoured bloated budget at the worldwide box office, raking in over $500 million.
Cool.
I still think it's a bit mad. I saw it and it wasn't a bad film, but it...
I haven't never watched it.
To be honest, having watched it twice now, I do actually like it.
It's all right. I mean, as I say, it's not a bad film. It's just a bit...
I think that... I'm still not sure, again, about the fact that they put in running zombies. I kind of get why they did it from like a sort of aesthetics, kind of visual impact thing.
And I would imagine the pace as well.
Well, not just... There was...
Well, cause, I mean, if you think about it, you know, the guy is going from country to country to country. He visits about at least four countries, you know, throughout what? The film. You know, that without that kind of whole running thing, then...
Well, you say that, but even in the novel, even though there were slow zombies, everything seemed very dangerous and very fast-paced with each individual story. I just feel like still that they bought the name for no reason because they really didn't use much from the book in the film. But I'm not against seeing a sequel, and so long as... but then again, I can now, because obviously we know how, I'm not going to spoil it, but how to deal with the problem. They kind of figure that out by the end of the film. But
is
then
it
I
kill all sons of bitches?
Kind of. But try not to at the same time, if that makes sense. But anyway, it's the idea of them kind of like, I can just see some of the scenarios popping up in my head now and for trying to increase like how tense things are. And it's just kind of, I think it would actually make for really boring cinema because they could see them overusing it far too much.
Can I just say that in regards to purchasing the rights, from a certain point perspective, it's actually better to purchase the rights and do something that's slightly off from its origin than to not purchase the rights and potentially be sued later on for having stuff that's a bit too close.
There's hardly any... thing in the film at all. Like, a lot of it's generic. Like, you couldn't trace it that easily, if at all, except for the name. If they changed the name, it'd be pretty much unrelated. Seriously.
Which is still an odd thing to do.
Yeah.
But I think I want to talk about now one of the... We've got two more bits of news for you. One of the biggest bits of news, certainly in the UK this week for us geeky types, is that Future made some announcements this week. Well, the CEO
did. Future Publishing, just in case you're wondering.
They don't they tend to call themselves just Future. Their logo is just Future rather than Future Publishing.
All right, but by the same token, you know, we're not saying that we've got a message from the future here.
Or have we?
No, looking at what they've said, it's definitely a message from the past.
Yeah.
It's like a bottle's been found on the beach that was sent like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
More like 30, I think, really.
Because this internet thing will never take off.
So Future haven't been doing that well, and like many publishers, they've been struggling with the advent of online and how this has affected how people kind of like consume news. news, print media, and the such like, as in the not really consuming print media, which is where they made most of the money, because advertising is a fickle thing at the moment in terms of making revenue from it. So ideally, you want people to subscribe and, you know, buy stuff. But then at the same time, the mixed messaging in the statement released by their CEO is such that they still kind of want to rely on advertising. But yet not at the same time. It's just well weird. One of the immediate effects, when I say immediate, most likely effects that will be coming from what Future put forward last week is that websites such as CVG, Edge, and all the official UK console magazine websites will be closing down in the future.
As what?
In...
No. Really please. I read them during a break. No.
Yeah. I mean, even though I don't sometimes like the... Mind you, CVG's gotten better than it used to be, but even I occasionally read them. I certainly read Edge.
It's still an insult to the original print magazine that it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just the fact that the name, computer and video games, because it was games you played at home on your computer, and video games, which were the arcade games.
Can I just ask, right, because basically it's looking to close down a load of websites like CVG and Edge and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it'll be still doing print media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why do they think that people won't bother to actually just go to another place online to get...
Well, you, so that's the thing, because even if they... Say, even if they're still continuing to print certainly Edge magazine and the official UK magazines, even if they continue to print those and offer digital editions of those either through apps or sort of natively or whatever in, like, the App Store or the Android Store and, like, because it's, like, Newsstand on Android, even if they do... that, there's still the fact that it's kind of like, well, people are still obviously having to pay for that, so what are they going to get for paying for it? Like, what are they going to get different? Because you've just taken away one resource, which maybe was allowed, would have given them a bit of a tease for content coming up in the magazines.
You're
anyway.
Gonna get a copy of Knack for the PS4.
Yeah. It's just, oh, I've got a good idea. We want to make more money. Therefore, we will make our content less available.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah. What the statement, part of the statement from CEO, and I have no idea how to pronounce this, Zila Bing Madic.
That's a name.
They said, clearly Future's print revenues have continued to decline, but our consumers are highly engaged and new revenue streams are available. Our revised business model is based on the virtuous circle of engagement in two core content areas, reviews, when consumers are looking to make product purchase decisions and where we can derive e-commerce revenues, and how-to opportunities, when consumers want to learn more and are prepared to pay us to help them do so through tutorials, events, etc. These were the foundations of Future's initial success in the 1980s, and they will remain at the core of our strategic focus through the next phase of transformation.
Can I just say that at the beginning when you were reading through that, you sounded really, really dramatic.
Yeah, like and then
you kind of...
And then I went to the robot, because that is pure garbage. Really, what the kind of wording things
they're
there.
This internet thing will never catch on.
So they're going to close down a load of sites, so you won't be able to access them on the website.
You also won't be able to comment on it.
One of the main revenue streams they want to initialise is e-commerce.
Yeah.
Excellent stuff, right? Okay, I can see that working.
Bonus. I mean, there are definitely not news and reviews and feature sites out there. Eurogamer.net. God's sake, you'll have seen everywhere that, of course, you know, everyone's printing a magazine these days. All these websites have said, well, there's obviously no success to be had on the internet, we'll have to get into print.
It's not just that they're saying that they're going to drive e-commerce revenues, which obviously means, well, surely you either need to have a web presence or an interactive digital.
Yeah, exactly.
I presume that they're thinking selling their magazines electronically rather than just having websites with, you know, contents up there, or apps, which, you know, will be their way of doing the same thing.
I mean,
either way, you're getting rid of the just the browsing and there putting the, you know, oh, I want a review of Watch Dogs. Tap, 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 tap. Oh, there's, you know, I recognize that name, you know, CVG or Edge. Yeah. Yeah, let's have a look. Oh, that's good. I can click on their link and I can buy it through them. They've got rid of that.
Do you reckon that this statement has come from Australia? From some guy
who like has who has an affinity with safes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It can be obviously his new safe. PR job. Well, you know, after he helped launch the Xbox One last year.
It's either that or they've been watching too much television and been watching that Revolution.
Oh, TV.
Yeah, and they think that basically in 5-10 years' time there'll be no electricity to power the internet.
We'll have used it all up.
And the thing is that, but they're saying that they want to basically have reviews where obviously a purchasing option of what's being reviewed is available. Well, through doing that, then the more savvy readers, which I hope they would be like, wait, how can I trust this review? Because you're offering a direct option for me to buy this thing with a review. So how can I trust the review when it's clear that, because they're going to have to say somewhere that these are essentially affiliate links.
It's really bizarre. Weird. I have to say I haven't bought a print magazine in years, a games magazine.
Yeah.
Because
they're
on the net.
I don't understand, especially with like the games thing, why they didn't decide to go a bit kind of like, okay, we're going to have differentiated content, or at least one model is going to have different content to the other. So the magazine's going to have different content to the website.
Yeah.
We're going to put the website behind, we're going to have a website physical copy digital copy subscription bundle, put part of the website behind like some kind of paywall. And just be like, right, if you want access to everything and the website will have stuff that the magazine doesn't and vice versa, you give us money.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I believe that, and especially with that's kind of a model that the likes of people like certainly Telegraph are doing. Because basically, you on Telegraph's website, I don't think they've changed it, but basically you can look at so many articles a month and then you hit paywall. But if you can subscribe, there's different subscription levels and you can get, digital content access, physical copies, blah, blah. Obviously, somebody like The Times, the Murdoch stuff is straight up wall.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you have to subscribe, to get anything now.
But which is great because I can just ignore most of it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I see less Sunlinks this time of year now than That's I true. Used to.
Yep.
Which is a positive.
Mm. Shame about Daily Mail, but, kind of covering everything. Yeah. But, it just seems so...
All growing up.
It just seems counterintuitive, especially with the whole linking, the buying of the product with reviews and features about the product. It does to me seem to be like, well, people will question that because that's essentially they're going to be getting advertising because they really want you to read that review, feel infused then to click on a bloody link to buy a thing.
Yeah, they seem to be weirdly convinced that people rely on their magazines.
Mm.
And I have to say, personally, that day has gone. I used to read, some magazines back in the day.
I used to read loads of magazines back in the day, to be fair.
Yeah.
And Sega Power.
I used to read them, nigh religiously because you couldn't get that kind of, thing anywhere else. Stuff like Zap 64, Commodore User.
Yes.
Things like that I would read. And I knew with, some magazines, especially certain reviewers, I knew what their taste was. So it's like, well, they like it, therefore it's good. But now, I'm not even sure I could, say, well, if Edge really liked a game, I would definitely buy it. I would still look elsewhere. And if they're removing themselves from the ease of just being able to go peek at their site to see what they say, my opinion is, I'll just go look somewhere else then.
The thing is I tend to look online for reviews. I buy print magazines for features and interviews. Not necessarily print, but certainly, because I have a digital subscription to Total Film, which is another feature title. Obviously, that's their film magazine.
Yeah.
And I get that through Google Play Newsstand.
Mm-hmm.
And it works certainly better on a tablet because it's essentially high definition scans of the magazine, and you got there's no kind of like guided view of the articles or anything really. It certainly looks better on a tablet than a phone, and I've got a huge phone. And it's just kind of like, well, I know what Total Film's website is like. A lot of what ends up in their magazine ends up on the website, and it's kind of more of an access thing, as in like how quickly do you want to access this information, which is what happens with a lot of magazines and their websites. It's like stuff will come out in the magazine first,
yeah,
certainly for features and interviews, and then it'll be in, and then it'll be on the website afterwards,
which makes perfect sense.
But I do think that if people still want to keep doing print, they need to differentiate the offerings. They don't necessarily have to produce more content, but they've got to say, well, one's going to have particular types of content, the other's going to have particular types of content, and they complement each other, and you want both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yes, yeah, so I personally think, from my doing crap like this for a while, but from my experience, I just think Future are screwing the pooch a bit.
What do you mean by crap like this?
Crap like... Not so, like this. I'm just... Well, maybe...
You know what I think they should do with our magazines?
Go on.
Cover tapes. There we go. That helped to the ZX Spectrum and Commodore 64 markets.
No, I can remember them. And free demo discs.
Yeah.
PS2 magazines.
Isn't it funny how as soon as the consoles got online marketplaces where they could, you know, slap up demos?
Yeah.
How the sales figures for the official magazines with their cover discs just went down.
Yeah.
Isn't that really bizarre? It's almost like people were just buying them for the demos.
Yeah.
Daft, isn't it?
Okay, I'm going to move us on to our last bit of news for the week. And 6 seasons on a movie. Community could return, courtesy of Hulu.
I might have watched some of the episodes by the time it comes back, if it does.
It's good. We've been watching.
I know. I keep hearing it's great, and I have seen some of these are the running jokes that they've had. and it's taken years for them to do. Like there was a Beetlejuice one where they just had a character say it, and then like next season they'd have another character just say Beetlejuice, and then the third time another character said it in yet another season. You had someone pop up and look like Beetlejuice and just walk past in the background.
Cool.
And it's like, that's a hell of a setup. So, and it's got John Oliver in, so...
Yeah.
I should like it.
Well, Jay's been around for a while, where we've got to.
No, he hasn't. William is still around there.
But to say that Sony are in talks with Hulu, and series creator Dan Harmon is also involved, but nothing is certain yet, certainly not when I was researching this yesterday. And I haven't seen Twitter explode with either positive or negative news in the 24 hours since I made this outline. So I'm assuming we're on status quo at the moment in terms of talks are still ongoing.
Thanks. Now I've got status quo in my head.
Obviously, Hulu doesn't exist in the UK, as we have discussed before, as in, like, legitimately doesn't exist in the UK.
Doesn't it?
for reasons involving our television broadcasters not liking it.
Basically, for reasons with greed and stupidity and dickishness.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, well, if it were to obviously go to Hulu in the States, I'm not sure how it would come over here, because I'm not sure if
DVD.
Well, because you'd think that if there's enough interest generated, then perhaps somebody would want to pick it up. Well, but it probably wouldn't be a terrestrial broadcast. It'd probably either be Sky or a rival to, because you know I can't, because Hulu's pushing for original content now, which is one of the reasons why it's in talks. But I can't see it being like in other territories. Oh, okay, we'll sell the rights to like Netflix or Amazon Prime. AKA Love Film.
That would be interesting. But now, I've heard from my mate Dave Internet that Hulu do buy up things which isn't, you know, which aren't shown on US TV. Things like, you know, The Wrong Mans and Misfits.
Oh, yeah.
Hulu bought those and listed them as Hulu originals.
Yes, ooh. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. So it's possible that they could do, you know, sign some, you know, some kind of deal, which would be, you know, kind of that, but in reverse. So if they start commissioning original content, if someone comes along and says, we want to buy the rights to show it in this country where you're not operating, you know, your Hulu platform, then I very much doubt they'd turn down the monies.
No, that's true.
I suppose as long as it's not on their main, because obviously if the US is their main income turf, then they wouldn't be so averse to signing deals with somebody like Netflix UK or Amazon in the UK.
Yeah.
But I know, I mean, Paul and I have waited years to watch any of it, and then he finally treated me to a box set of the first four seasons. We're finally on the fourth season, and that is where a creative changeover happened, though, because people left the show behind the scenes. And so far, I'm not completely sold on the fourth season in comparison to the first three seasons. You can note there is a noticeable change, I think.
Well, I heard that for the fifth season, the creator came back.
Yeah.
But so yeah, even though I've not, I think I've seen one episode, but it was just in isolation. And it's like, yeah, it seemed good. It seemed nice enough, but obviously, you know, when you just see something, you know, plucked out the middle, you don't have the, you know, the sum of its parts. But it was something where I thought, oh yeah, I could watch, you know, more of this. But obviously, I think there were, you know, little hints, little tips of the hat with characters and things going on, and probably running jokes that were just, you know, completely going over my head.
But I mean, the thing is though, is that you know, as far as I can tell, even if you don't get a lot of the references, it doesn't kind of penalise you for it. It's not like, oh, well, we're going to run this one segment which references something obscure and half the audience isn't going to get it and, you know.
It wasn't like, you know, walking into a room full of hipsters and, you know, them having private jug. And you're like, oh, sodgy then. So it wasn't like that. It was, you know, yeah, you know, I like this, but I get the feeling, you know, there are little references being made and, you know, little things where I can tell that, you know, they are there, but I don't know what they're to.
I know that there's at least one person far more invested in this continuing on Hulu than myself or Paul.
Who's that?
Martin Lejeune. The Foudor, he loves the community. So if you're listening, Martin, I do kind of hope for your sanity's sake that it does get picked up.
I don't get it because certain people have kind of turned around and said, oh, just let it die type thing. Oh, it's, you know, it's kind of done its thing, just let it die. And it's like, well, no.
You know, ironically, I was listening to the, you know, the Bugle podcast, which John Oliver does with Andy Zaltzman. And he mentioned at the start of the year, because, you know, with certain things happening, I wasn't going out walking, so I wasn't listening to podcasts, which meant I didn't download the podcast, which meant I didn't listen to them. So I'm just sort of listening to, as the Bugle would term it, hours of condensed bullshit. And at the start of the year, John Oliver mentioned that, you know, they were filming, you know, the latter episodes of Community. And he says, you know, tune in because there are, you know, new episodes being shown on, is it NBC in the States?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he said, and, you know, and look on in wonder as, you know, something that should never have been commissioned on network TV continues to get renewed. And he's like, oh, speaking too soon.
Slightly, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to move us on now to... I would like to know what people have been up to. Retroid?
Well, legally.
Legally.
Or sort of nefarious.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, we've seen the wanted posters and the reward money, so we're kind of like, you know, kind of edging you to more towards the more illegal stuff.
Never taking your life. I have been playing old stuff, which I know is a massive shock to people. I recently got two machines out my loft, and I've been pissing about with them. I grabbed my Commodore 64.
Ooh, that sounds painful.
If it's the original big red box one, then it would be very painful.
Sorry.
And my Atari Jaguar.
Yay.
And pretty much both machines for me have been playing about, you know, one game each. On the Commodore 64, I have been playing, yet again, Whizball, which no one else has heard of apart from Cookie, have they?
Have you heard of it, Cookie?
Of course, Whizball was ace.
See? It's an excellent game. It's a little bit hard to describe. It's kind of like a shoot 'em up where you control a wizard in a green ball, which is the aforementioned Whiz Ball, because it's a wizard in a ball. And you have your cat, which is a smaller floating green ball, which is known as the Catalyte. The wizard shoots things. The cat collects colour. The plot of the game, it doesn't need a plot. It's the baddie has removed all the colour from the world. So when you first start off, the levels are in a completely grayscale.
Yeah.
So each level has a primary, it's got enemies and a primary colour. You collect the different colours from the different levels and you mix them together, and as soon as you've got the right amounts, it will send you off into a bonus game. You select a power-up like anti-gravity, which will stop you bouncing, or you know, more firepower, things like that. And it will add it to the landscape until you've replaced the three primary colours on each landscape, and then you unlock harder levels. Now, what I like about this game is that, it's a shoot-em-up, but the game mechanism in it is so well thought out with the different looks of the, you know, the level. Each level has its own look, like, you know, it's like some looks like a sort of space age version with Mount Rushmore, and another one will be just like a moon landscape. And another will be pipes, and another will be old-fashioned wells, and another will be sort of frozen water. And it looks very nice on the Commodore 64 using, you know, its limitations well. And it's just really good. I got a few friends to, you know, replay it relatively recently on Eurogamer, including a few who had never played the Commodore 64 version. You know, they had other formats like the Amstrad CPC or the Spectrum, or, you know, the Amiga back in the day. Yeah. But to my mind, the only one which really counts is the Commodore 64 version, because that was the original one by a team that primarily worked on the Commodore 64, and they did it to the machine's strengths, so they knew precisely what they were doing with it. And it holds up today. If you put this on, say, a PSP or a DS or something like that, it would still work as a game mechanic. I guarantee it. And it does
remind me of a couple of years ago now when we went to X-Play in Plymouth, and the game jam there was kind of building a game around the concept of colour.
Yeah.
And this kind of sounds like it almost could have been, you know, one of those games. Obviously, if it wouldn't have been for the fact that, you know, it's been out for, you know, how many years?
Oh, God. I think it was released in something like 86, 87.
No, really?
Yeah.
Blimey. You do realise that I was, in 87, I was 2 years old.
Oh, fuck off.
Have you been playing anything else, Retroid?
I have been on the Atari Jaguar. I have been playing the reason to own an Atari Jaguar, which is, of course, Tempest 2000 by Jeff Minter.
Yay.
And it's just, it's bloody brilliant.
What kind of game is it? Another game where it's
got even less reason for plot or anything like that than Whizball, where, you know, the whole reason for, you know, the plot of Whizball is just, well, we might as well put something in there, you know, the little booklet on the back of the cover. But with this, it's just, it's a shoot 'em up. It's directly related to TXK, which recently came out on the Vita and is coming on PS4 as well. And you just travel around the rim of a web that, you know, descends down below you. Enemies ascend up the web towards you, and you fire down at them and avoid them, and you can get power-ups to jump and increase your firepower and things like that. And then you either pick up a power-up to, warp, or once you've killed enough of them, you'll then progress to the next different ship web, and it keeps introducing new enemies, and you have to work out how to deal with them. And it's just, it's abstract in its graphical style because it doesn't need to look like anything. It can just be, some of the enemies look like coloured sparks, multicolour sparks. Other ones just look like little bow ties that rotate around, and, you know, they will move around the web. And others look like bullheads because why the hell not? And if you haven't played Tempest 2000, which I'm guessing neither of you two have. You have or you haven't?
Haven't.
I've been playing this game since it was released, on and off. Just because it's so well designed. And I just looked it up before we started recording this. And it came out in April 1994. So I've been playing this for round about 20 years, which makes me sad. You get happy because I've been playing this for 20 years.
It's just class, isn't it?
It's just excellent. It's got, you know, neither of these two games have any waste. They don't have any filler. They don't have any padding.
They're just fun.
Yeah, they are a game with their own rules. And I recommend, you know, to anyone, it's like, if you've not played them, go seek them out.
Cookie, what have you been up to?
I've been enjoying the first season of The Originals, which took me totally by surprise. Didn't really know much about it because I just saw some adverts on Sci-Fi for it. Started watching it. Got really involved with it.
What's the concept?
Because I don't really know what this is. So
it's actually a spin-off from The Vampire Diaries.
Uh-oh.
But it's actually a lot better than The Vampire Diaries.
Not hard.
Well, yeah, exactly. It centres around the original vampire family, the Michelson siblings, one of the original vampire families. And it's the whole concept is they've basically returned to New Orleans, which was their city until 1919 when they were chased off by their father. And they return to New Orleans, and they actually meet up for the first time in centuries to be a family again. Mm. And there's civil unrest because the city's now in charge by another sector of vampires who are controlling the witches, the werewolves, and the humans, who all used to live in fairly harmonious sort of culture with the originals. And it sort of follows the family getting back together, dealing with why they split up in the first place. Lots of blood, lots of gore, lots of fighting, civil unrest, and it's just really good fun. You've got the Elijah, who's sort of the noble gentleman of the family, the older brother. You've got Klaus, who is sort of like an anti-hero. He's a bit psychotic. He's also a hybrid. He's half vampire, half werewolf, which makes him a bit more on edge. He's a bit more sadistic than the other two as well. But you actually get to see moments where you realise that if certain things probably hadn't happened, he probably wouldn't be that way. And then you've got Rebecca, the younger sister who's really trying to just enjoy life rather than have her sort of hemmed away in the corner by older brothers, which is quite cool.
Can I just say that hearing that they've got, like, obviously werewolves and whatnot involved
mm-hmm.
as well?
Yeah.
I think what will be refreshing is a modern day tale of something like vampires, where there is no other mythical creatures, where it's literally just vampires are true and everything else is complete myth. Because, you know, possibly, yeah. Nowadays, whenever you have, like, a vampire, you know, kind of even just a vampire character or whatnot in, like, a TV or film or whatnot, they always seem to crop up, like, werewolves.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a bit more to it with the originals, purely because Klaus is a hybrid. So he's got certain other abilities, like his bite can actually infect and kill the vampires.
Ooh.
Because only a bite by a werewolf can really kill vampires, apart from the originals, because the originals are a bit more powerful. But if you manage to kill an original, all the vampires that have been sired by them die at the same time.
Ah, okay, so it's slight twist. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it is. Concept. It's not like glittery, scrapping like Twilight. It is very old. It's very sort of dark. It's a bit more. They will suck your blood out. They do have to feed on blood.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of taking from the older vampire lore.
Yes. A bit like the Vampire Chronicles, in some sense.
Which is the Anne Rice books.
Yeah, which I love. And, of course, it's set in New Orleans, which has always got that mystery around it anyway. And the witches are quite cool in it as well.
See, that sounds more interesting than I thought. For some reason, with a name like the originals, even though it makes perfect sense, I was expecting it to be some kind of, like, superhero thing.
Yeah, no, it totally threw me. I mean, I started watching it, I'll be honest. I hate The Vampire Diaries. I'm sorry, but I really do hate it. And I started watching this, and then my stepson came in. He was like, oh, you're watching Klaus, he's off The Vampire Diaries. I just looked at him and said, fuck off. So I looked it up and I was like, oh my bloody hell, it is as well. He's one of the baddies in The Vampire Diaries. What the fuck's going on here?
And is it the actual same character or just the same actor?
Pardon?
Is it just the same actor or is it?
Yeah, same actor and everything, yeah.
What about the same character?
Same character, yeah. But it's just, I don't know, it's just a lot more adult themed.
A lot more not crap.
Yeah, a lot more not crap, basically. It's a lot more, it is more aimed at the adults, I think. Because, I mean, you know, you see Klaus actually threatening to kill a teenager just to get a witch to do his bidding.
Okay. Which is
pretty cool, you know. So you do see.
So we've all been in that situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it is a lot more refreshing. And it's quite nice to see something a bit more punchy coming out at the moment.
Paul, what have you been up to?
I've been playing Mario Kart 8! Woohoo!
So that was you.
What do you mean that? So that was me?
How much have Wii U sales increased since the launch of Mario Kart 8, Paul?
Interestingly, 666%.
Really? Wow, there's 666 been sold.
So we've just been talking about vampires and devil worship.
Actually, 6.6. So. Should have. Because I'm thinking, oh, I'm getting me percentages just mental here. Never mind.
Is it any good then?
It is actually very good, yeah.
It does look like a brilliant title.
It is. I mean, the graphics. I've heard
absolutely nothing bad about this, really.
Absolutely. I mean, the graphics look absolutely gorgeous. I mean, some would argue that, oh, you know, it's cartoony anyway.
For a last gen machine, it looks quite good. I'll be nice now.
I don't believe you. the AI is still twatish.
Yeah.
Is it still that blue shell?
It's not so much the blue shells now, it's just the I suppose it's just the power ups and, you know.
And the one, because I've only had a chance to play through one cup since we picked it up, and that was only four races, playing with everyone else. because we had a bunch of people around on Saturday, and we had Chinese and Mario Kart 8. And I managed to only play four races. And to me, it felt like the balance between the human characters picking up items had perhaps gotten worse towards the humans compared to the last few games. It felt it was harder to get decent items.
I mean, in first place, you can get... Well, usually you end up getting, like, a coin. It's like, yay.
Do the coins actually do anything? Because they did in the original Super Mario Kart.
Yeah, you collect them, so you can unlock kind of new vehicles, new customizations and whatnot. But they also give you a small, and I do mean small, speed boost as well.
You see, that is what they were for in the original SNES version. Which is the version of Mario Kart that I played by far the most of.
I just want to defend myself a moment because I've just realised that we've had this game all weekend and I've literally only done four races. I had to take some Puritan on Saturday night after eating the Chinese because something in the Chinese put me into an allergic reaction. And if I take antihistamines, I kind of, you know... Dope. It's a good thing I wasn't in charge of an actual vehicle that night, considering I wasn't even drinking either.
But by far, one of the most enthusiastic kind of modes is actually Mario Kart TV, where you can actually kind of create and view and upload a highlight reel of your races. And I've just got, earlier on today, I saw some small gifs of some of the like facial expressions that Luigi does when he kind
I saw him even driving past someone and then just sort of glaring.
Was yeah, exactly.
And he goes, oh, Luigi's a dark bastard, isn't he?
Yeah. It's been like, you know, kind of a whole host of, you know, ones like that where it's like Luigi kind of throws a shell at the back of somebody who's like, as he gets by.
You know what? He is the one that's had to clear out a mansion or two. A few ghosts. Too many times with ghosts. Yeah.
And he's always the other one because his brother Mario turns up and everyone's going, oh, it's him, Mario. And oh, yeah, he's the one with green.
So what about Luigi?
It's all that resentment.
What's the unlike online?
To be honest, I haven't played the online, but it's quite good. It's I don't think it has quite as much customization. That's incorrect. It has plenty of customization. But in terms of, say, for example, when I noticed the online, instead of actually picking from basically all of the tracks, you kind of get a choice of three or random, which I suppose is good in a way because it stops people from basically just picking the one course that they've practiced over and over and over again, you know, basically spamming it. But by the same token, if you do really fancy going on a specific course, then, you know, could be out of luck. Also, another thing that I have noticed is that you can talk to other people, but you can only do certain phrases. And I think that is actually a very, very good thing, despite what it may seem like to other people, because basically, well, put it this way, when I was playing it earlier on, the air was blue. Because, you know, you just...
And who was making the air blue?
That would be me. But yeah, basically, it's a case of virtually every Mario Kart, you get to the higher up cups, you know, you get to the more difficult tracks, and you kind of pound in through first place, you know, all up until like the last quarter of the last lap. On the track, boom, you get kind of hit by a red shell, boom, you get hit by a banana, boom, you get hit by this, that, and you end up, you know, in like sixth or seventh place before you know it, and it completely ruins your score. So yeah, I can imagine that being you know, a case with online as well, where you'd have basically people that just turn around and shout, you know, kind of really, really abusive, nasty, possibly even illegal things at you because, you know, that's the way that the previous race has turned out. So I can completely understand why Nintendo have gone the course of not allowing you to speak to, you know, kind of random people online. If you know what I mean.
That's cool.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair comment.
I have seen a lot of nice things about this, and they had a copy in Asda as well when I was in there earlier, which, to be honest, it's very rare to see Wii U things in my Asda.
Yeah, well, it's quite rare to see Wii U things in a lot of places now.
Certainly supermarkets.
Yeah. They've got quite a cool promotion on the bit at the moment as well, isn't it?
Yes, there's the you can basically, if you register it, you get a free download code for one of 10 titles that you can actually choose which one you get.
I saw a few people saying that they downloaded things like Wind Waker HD?
Yep, that's one of the offers. They've also got Pikmin 3, they've got Monster Hunter, they've got Sonic Lost World, they've got Nintendo Land, Super Mario Bros. Wii U, Beautiful Joe, I believe.
Now, you see, you should have just stopped and only mentioned Pikmin 3.
Well, you know, Pikmin 3 is one of the choices. Pikmin 3 has actually got a update which allows you to kind of use the stylus, kind of a new control mode for it.
Oh, cool.
So, but anyway, Emily is kind of wanting to say something now.
Well, I want to talk about what I've been up to. Gosh darn it!
Is it as exciting as Mario Kart 8?
No.
Is it as exciting as Wii Ball on Tempest 2000?
Debatable. I didn't realise that I hadn't installed Left 4 Dead 2 from on my Steam, so I was just kind of like, oh my god, so I downloaded it and started playing it again.
Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh, I was playing it online. Oh, the pain. I wasn't like I was playing it on any hard difficulty. Was it on easy or normal, depending on what I could find? Because there's no way I was going to go on advanced or expert. And I tried playing, because a lot of people were playing the Left 4 Dead levels. And Blood Harvest kept coming up, so I was like, fine, I'll play through Blood Harvest. I don't know, they weren't necessarily noobs, they were just almost like they were suicidal, the guys I ended up with. Because there was one guy, when we were from the safe room to the final pickup point in Blood Harvest, so you come out of a train carriage, and we were spawning with, there was a fuel tank near us, and this one person kept picking up this fuel tank, taking it ahead on the tracks to a train carriage you climb up.
I can kind of see where this is going.
The thing is, though, is that for some reason, he would drop the fuel tank before climbing up the carriage, but he'd be on like the one side of this fuel carriage, and the rest of us, the three of us, be on the other side of this fuel tank. He'd light the fuel tank, you know, by shooting at it, and so there'd be all these flames. Suddenly this, and because he's by himself at this point, he just gets freaking mauled by some special infected, maybe a couple of regulars that might be just lurking around. And of course, we can do fudge all about it because we're cut off by the flames. And you keep doing this, obviously, before the final pickup point in the entire bloody level.
Oh, God.
And I was just like, this guy's freaking nuts. I'm assuming it was a guy. Most statistically, probably was.
Sexist.
He's obviously just cannon fodder.
Well, but he was doing it to himself, and it was like, what the hell?
I love the Left 4 Dead games, but I have had so many arguments online about that, with those games, especially with mates who have been playing as a team.
In what kind of arguments?
Well, you know, like, for instance, you're working as a team, somebody sets off the witch, they're screaming for help, you go to help, you get the witch off them, you're shooting the witch. You're like, where are you guys? Where are you? We've run around to the corner to the exit. What do you mean? Where the fuck are you?
Fuck you very much then?
I've got the witch. It's on top of me. The witch is killing me because I've just saved your ass. Where the fuck are you?
What was really bad was when we finally, like, one of the attempts got through to, like, the house where you call for help and Blood Harvest.
Yeah.
And we restarted twice. And after the first restart, there's one guy who started at the beginning. Him and me were the only original players from this playthrough. And he says, you're a bunch of noobs. And the thing is, the reason we died is because everyone was hanging around the house rather than going to that barn that's got ammo.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. And has the fewest access points imaginable. Mm. And it's essentially the safest place to be whilst waiting for pickup. on that level. And I was like, I wanted to go to the barn, but I'm pretty sure none of them would have followed me. Because dude that was claiming everyone was noobs was hanging around the house. And I was like, well, I could go to the barn by myself and see what happens, or I could stay near you guys.
Can I just say that I think it'd actually be interesting if we four actually went on Left 4 Dead 2 at some point and basically made something, like a video or something.
What do you think? What, like, how to survive Blood Harvest on easy or normal? Because it's,
how
it's,
not to be a dick.
It's one of the easiest fun quotes, because that barn area, it's got a couple of good places for you to just quickly bail if the tank gets in. You know, you've got options there, and it has ammo. So it's like you've got options and ammo, and the flipping pickup truck pulls up near there. So it just makes, basically. I've tried that 3 times. 2 with the same playthrough, and then sort of had to give up. And then later on, I tried it with another bunch of people and just had to give up again, because we didn't even make it past like to the first safe house. So I was just like, we're playing on easy or normal, and I was just like, why is this all going wrong? I was trying to stick with people. People were being really bad. Sticking
if
with
you
people.
Play in a group, you stand a chance.
Yeah.
The game is brutal like that. If you know, piss off on your own, something's going to happen and you're going to die.
That's what I love about
horribly.
It. Yeah. We used to pause the game and we used to have hours and hours of just confabs of where somebody would be at a certain point, where they've got to go after that. You've got to be up there. You go cover us down there. We'll get them like this. And then we'd play it through and realise, we've actually fucked that up because we didn't see that coming from behind us. And then you just run the scenario again and you'd be like, yeah, we'd do that. And that's what I loved about it. It was
tell you, I was getting the most kind of like, I protected blah messages, or I just killed this special that was, you know, was about to kill someone, kind of, you know, or I killed the charger, which happened to be pummeling this player. Because also, if you're playing Left 4 Dead 2, it brings in the special infected on the original levels as well. The newer special infected, so it's just like, just everything. And then, other than that, I decided to pick up Thief cheap secondhand, as in the new one.
Oh, yeah.
Picked up on PS3.
Yes. Hang on. I will just say, you know, with Left 4 Dead, I found that with every additional human player, it ramps up the difficulty something stupid.
Yes.
And I have to admit, when I'm played about with it, I mostly just put it on single player because of exactly what you've described.
Yeah. You need a well-coordinated team, preferably in the same room.
Yeah, because having AI teammates is usually far preferable to complete dicks
except
who run around.
Except for that one time we played Coldstream. And, what's the guy that wears the white suit called again?
Nick.
Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Paul and I mean, I was Rochelle. Paul was, who are you? Were you Ellis or something?
No, I was Coach, I think.
You were Coach. There's us kind of like hanging on for dear life after having been washed away by this torrent on an edge of a cliff. And Nick just stands there whilst the gauge for how long you can hang on for just slowly drains away.
Hey guys, you coming? Yeah, come on, get up here.
And we can't get up!
And the AI wouldn't pick us up, so that was great.
No, didn't Ellis come to help? And he was like, what?
Did he die hanging on as well?
Yeah, I think he was hanging on as well.
Sometimes that happens. Nothing. And he's just, why?
But yeah, so I've been playing, I started playing Thief because I picked it up cheap. So far, my main concern is the lip sync so far.
You haven't played through much of the game, to be fair.
No, I've played the first 2 levels and that was tonight. And that was just like, because I installed it yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to play it. And I was just like, it's no Dishonored. Which is the nearest I've gotten to a Thief game in recent years. And I was just like, it was very telling me what to do. And I'm not playing on the easy, I'm on like whatever's kind of like normal-ish difficulty. But it just seemed to be, there seemed to be a lot less freedom about how to go. Like you can't jump. You know, like just on the spot or something. You can't you've got, it seems to me that you've got a lot less freedom in how you approach levels than you did in Dishonored, which is crazy because Thief was touted in development far more and for far longer than Dishonored was.
I've seen some very unflattering comparisons between, you know, the original Thiefs and this.
Yeah.
Where it's like in the original one, you can go here, 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 go around this way, go, you know, go at the high ground, you know, go through tunnels. This one, it's, see that straight line? That's where you go.
Yeah, it feels a bit like that so far, but I'm gonna go for it because I don't think it's like a terribly, terribly bad game that would out of the recent releases in the past 12 months.
Well, now considering you've played, was it Vampires and Dark?
Dark. Oh yeah, Dark, which came out last year, which was about you and a bunch of vampires, and you becoming a vampire. And I'm just going to leave it there because it was like it tried to be The Darkness with vampires, but failed horribly on all accounts.
But there's no sparkling.
And there's no sparkling. Phew. But I'm going to move us on now to our final discussion for the night. Because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has finally finished airing in the UK. And if you haven't watched the final episode and you don't want spoilers, now is the time to stop listening to our podcast. We love you, Dealey.
It was Coulson all along.
We love you, Dealey, but we don't want to be spoiling crap for you. So now is the time to leave. Is everyone who doesn't want spoilers gone?
Good night.
Good night. All right, okay, people who want spoilers, Chisel, you're here. Okay, fine.
This is a legally binding contract. You cannot sue us for spoiling anything now.
Exactly. We gave you warning.
There is no Santa.
Oh, fudge. We're in for it
now.
Whoa,
what do you mean?
Actually, there is a Santa. He works at Nintendo.
I was told he worked at Microsoft.
Huh. No.
Was anyone happy? Did people feel satisfied by the season's conclusion?
Yeah. Typically. It certainly got a lot stronger.
It got stronger, but I think it kind of went the complete opposite way to a certain extent because it just seemed to be all about, you know, basically catching Ward and, you know.
And Garrett.
And Garrett, yeah.
Yeah.
For the last, six episodes.
Where in the world was Carmen Sandiego? That's what it felt like for me.
She was on the S.H.I.E.L.D. carrier when it was, you know, went down. Yeah.
She was on it the whole time.
It has improved. I've got involved in with it a bit more and it's become a bit more. Oh, I don't.
It actually got to the point where I was wanting to watch episodes rather than, oh, it's on.
Yeah, that's what I was, that's exactly how I felt. I mean, it was getting to the point where it was on the planner. I'd recorded it the night before if I was on late and I'd come home and I wouldn't watch it. But then it got to the point where I'd want to watch it as soon as I got in. So it was slightly, it's opened up a lot of questions as well for season two. Which I hate about finales at the moment because they all seem to just want to leave you more questions to make sure you watch the new season. You get. But there you go. I suppose that's the nature of the beast. But, I don't know. Fitz and Simon were cool again. I'm really getting into them.
They are by far my favourite characters.
Yeah. Sky seems to be just, I don't know.
I like crap. Sky. I like Sky.
I like her. I like the fact that she's got this past that I want to find more about.
Mm.
Yeah.
But that's about it for me for Sky, sorry.
I was kind of disappointed that Ward is still around.
I was actually disappointed that he was... I thought he'd be redeemed in the last episode, if I'm honest.
I would have just shouted at the TV for a while if that had happened, because I know...
I'm surprised May didn't kill him.
I was hoping.
To be honest, I think, to be fair, they must have kind of reached a point in the season where we're like, okay, it's either not either we've got too many cast members or we've got somebody that's expendable on the team because nobody seems to like him. What shall we do? Ooh, I know.
Yeah.
I was seeing people commenting, oh, I love Skye so much and her and Ward, and, you know, my favourite characters. Oh, no, they won't be able to get together and it's all piss off.
I didn't like the relationship between Skye and Ward.
No.
I just didn't.
I don't think Ward's a very likable character in the first place. You know, even when he wasn't being, you know.
Even when he wasn't officially declared evil.
He was typically just this sort of action spy Bond guy, yeah. Wasn't he?
There's virtually nothing to him. Ass.
He was Angel stunt double.
The problem is, though, I actually preferred it when May got sent into Kick-Ass.
May's actually,
I like May.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's actually
I like
good.
May. She's got more interesting...
To a certain extent, I actually like the dynamic that they have in the team as it stands because, in essence, they've got, you know, Fitz and Simmons. Those are two scientists. Cool. But they've also got Skye, who's, you know, kind of a hacker. So they've got people with skills.
Yes.
And that's something that I do actually like because it's very rare that you get like an action series where, you know, there's more than one person that can do sciencey stuff. You know, it's usually, oh, the genius of the group can like do literally everything, you know, come up with plans, can come up with, you know, this, can come up with that. And, you know, there's kind of no need to have any more intelligence than that.
You know, you know
this
what?
Bucks the trend.
But then again, in earlier Whedon series, there were people who were multifaceted. Giles, well, I say multifaceted, you had more than one person being able to do skills. So you had Giles and Willow at the same time in Buffy. But then again, in Angel, it's even Angel. He knew stuff even when Wesley was brought in as a ongoing character. So you would cut, but yeah, at the same time, you have multiple people who would kick ass as well. So there was kind of like, it's something that's happened in a Whedon series before, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not to this extent because, you know, you have Fitz and Simmons, and they are both incredibly intelligent. And then you stick in Skye. Yeah, and then you stick in Skye.
I don't know if I mentioned that. I really like Fitz and Simmons, they are by far my favourite.
But then you stick in Skye, who's, you know, kind of been played up as this character that can, you know, has lots of hacker skills and whatnot, and you know, so you had like Buffy, in Buffy, and you had like Giles and you had Willow, but they weren't really powerful at the same time. Mm. It felt like as Giles's influence diminished, Willow's grew. So it's not like it was at the same time, and even when they were at the same time, they're on opposite sides, like at the finale to season 6.
Yeah, we
did.
We didn't give warnings for spoilers for Buffy.
Yeah, you can sue us over that. Please don't sue us.
What overall, I mean, because obviously we had the main plot line, which tied in with the films, the whole Hydra thing.
Yes.
But,
which is probably by far the best aspect of the
But were
series.
There any other plot lines, like either in individual episodes or sort of mini arcs or whatever in the series that people liked so far?
For me, it was probably just mainly the background on Coulson and how he was brought back to life. Mm. And Skye's past, which I still want to see develop because I want to see who her daddy is.
Yeah.
Because he looked like an evil, sick bastard.
He was dripping in blood, wasn't he, at the end of the episode?
Yeah, so he's an evil, sick bastard, yeah. He was just serious.
He might have just, you know, been come off from the same doctor that did Face Off.
That was pretty messy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unlikely that he's anything but evil. But he might not.
I mean, because there was that whole description of when they were talking about... Who was it who was having the conversation about Skye's parents?
May and Coulson when it was dropped off at the age...
Do you mean, like, at the very, very end of...
It was like they tore this place apart looking for her.
Oh, it was Flowers, wasn't it? Mm. Flowers and Ward.
That conversation kind of piqued my interest. So I think... I've been sort of like, I was hoping that this season we'd see Sky exhibit something that wasn't just hackery skills.
Yeah.
Or the ability to not die from, like, alien enzymes. I'm
assuming that's going to be a big part of season two, isn't it?
Or personality. I don't like Sky. I do like Fitz and Simmons.
And May.
Yeah, and May. And how about Coulson? Coulson as well.
Yeah, yeah. What about the guy that replaced Ward?
Yeah.
I was, he's better. I think that I could like him a lot more. He's just a drop-in replacement for Ward. That's fine.
So, just one question.
Mm.
What would make you like Sky?
Now, my obvious go-to is dying again, properly this time. I don't... With her, I've been trying to work out whether I don't like her character or the actress isn't that good. And I'm not sure which it is.
Emily's just pulling a sad face right now.
Why is that?
Because you're a distant guy.
Yeah, but Sky is not very good. She's not a terrible character. She's just... She doesn't interest me. I think she's just there to look pretty. And for plot.
You can't take the Sky from me.
Ah, Jesus. Now, you see, that just reminds me that this is going on and Firefly only got 13 episodes. So, very sad face. Sad and angry face.
Do we know whether or not it's confirmed Channel 4 will be picking up Season 2?
No, don't know yet.
Mm. Well, Channel 4 seem to be trying, don't they? Because they're doing Fargo as well.
Yeah.
So, they really do seem to be trying with the let's just buy in some American
things. And
there is some
random series that they were teasing during the screening of the final episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. What was it?
The 100.
The 100.
Is it that the one where the prisoners are ejected from the space station to try and settle on nuclear ravaged Earth?
Okay.
Sudden interest.
Yeah, it looked quite decent actually.
When does that start?
Oh, it didn't say. It just said coming soon, as they normally do. So that'll be about 4 years' time.
Okay.
You've forgotten all about it.
When they say coming soon, I don't know why they just don't say whenever.
Yeah.
Because
nice,
they've got the schedules pretty done, at least on what's happening in what month. Maybe not the precise times, but, you know.
It would be nice.
It does drive me nuts, especially when Sky do that, and it's coming in the next month. So they just say, coming soon, and then, you know, the first of the next month comes along, and they say, starting on the 14th.
Yeah.
Just bloody say that?
Yeah, Penny Dreadfuls. Perfect one. They've been advertising it for about 3 months, just as coming soon.
Yeah.
Okay, I've just got a question.
It's not S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Yes, this is actually bringing it back to S.H.I.E.L.D. Does it feel like a Whedon series to you?
Mm.
Fitz and Simmons feel like Whedon characters. And Coulson and May do.
I was going to say... The last sort of three or four episodes it's felt a little more like.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon. So.
When it went from it's on to, ooh, it's been on.
Yeah.
Also, you know.
There were one or two weeks when we'd got, you know, like two episodes backlogged and wasn't quite arsed enough to watch it. But the last few, it's like as soon as they were on. So, yeah, I love that.
To be fair.
The moment I realised it was a Whedon series was what happened to Garrett at the end of the final episode.
that was brilliant.
Yeah.
That's what I realised.
Yeah, I really like it with all this. Oh, yes, you know, we're, you know, build up. It's a, you know, casual.
It reminded me of what happened with,
Mayor? The Dracula episode.
Or Dracula or the Mayor in season 3.
Yeah, with it taking the kind of trope of the defeated enemy hasn't been defeated and it's going to come back. And you go, no, it has been defeated.
We're made very sure of this. It's very defeated, extremely defeated.
Look, you know, we've made it very clear. The cleaning lady is going to be pissed.
Mind you, it wasn't their place that he did it in, so it's fine. It wasn't Shield place.
That's true. And one of the things I liked about that was it was that device that they'd got in, what was it, the second episode? Something like that?
Yeah.
The thing for cutting through a rock or...
Yeah, and it was just, yeah, we found this thing and it's alien technology and we don't really know what it can do, but we can do that with it.
I'm kind of wondering which other wider Marvel Avengers Universe characters might make an appearance during season 2, because also we had, was it Sif?
Oh, yes, from Thor.
Yeah, from Thor earlier in the season. I liked her episode.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if, because obviously the reason they did that was because a whole bunch of the series happened when Thor 2 was out.
Yeah.
And obviously then it kind of shifted to the whole Hydra thing because, you know, Winter Soldier. So... So Guardians of the Galaxy is happening in August.
Is that meant to be set in the same universe?
Yes.
It is.
Because the things, the MacGuffins everyone's after is MacGuffins from some of the films.
Yes.
Yeah, MacGuffins.
I'm just going to start the rumour now that Loki's going to be in season 2.
That would be cool.
Just for the hell of it.
Wasn't there rumours at one point that Tom Hiddleston would play a character, or like a recurring character, or like become part of the team or something like that for S.H.I.E.L.D.? Or was that just something that, like a suggestion that got out of control and Chinese...
I think that was just a fevered fangasm.
I don't think they could afford to do that.
It's like, with the success he's got with, you know, the Thor and, you know, Avengers films, because, you know, he's a well-liked character, so I can't really see that happening. Obviously more likely than Robert Downey Jr.
I hope Thingy, who plays Bruce Banner...
Mark Ruffalo, yeah.
I hope Mark Ruffalo might make an appearance in the next season. That would be good.
Yeah.
Because a storyline involving him from a sciencey angle would really make sense, perhaps even more so than Tony Stark and Iron Man.
That's the thing, because all the movies seem to be feeding into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I think it's about time that, you know, it kind of happened the other way as well. If we had, like, you know, one or two episodes that featured, like, you know, Bruce Banner or something like that had events that were, you know, kind of at least mentioned in, like, a new Hulk film or something.
Definitely.
Because the thing is that, so S.H.I.E.L.D. will be starting again in the fall, autumn, and it will be continuing on until April, May-ish next year.
So you'll probably have a crossover of Avengers 2.
Yes, Age of Ultron. So that's the thing. I wonder what's going to happen. Is there going to be any hints regarding Age of Ultron? Probably. In the series, in the run-up, and how that would work.
And I think the big question is, what's going to actually happen to S.H.I.E.L.D. now? Because it seems like it's almost opened up an Angel situation, where Angel kind of gets the keys to Wolfram and Hart, and is like,
wow. Now he's got to build his team.
Yeah.
Build his pad. The point where Angel actually got good.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I'd disagree in the sense that, you know, I think that the previous seasons were good in their own way, but they weren't, like, opened up good.
I'm trying to think which season did I like the least. Which one?
Probably season 4.
I didn't like Connor.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jasmine.
Yeah, Connor. It just, just drop dead.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid that I will say this is all we've got time for this week, but I just want to point out.
Our season 2 finale was a lot more of a roller coaster than S.H.I.E.L.D.
No spoilers.
There was no spoilers.
Okay.
But it did kick ass.
Okay. I was going to point out that Matthew Hurd has done a fantastic piece over on Hex Dimension regarding Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Captain America, the Winter Soldier. And you will find a link for that in the show notes, but, you know, it's well worth a read. So that's all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm RetroArd on Eurogamer.net and SuperRetroArd on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul, aka one-armed underscore cookie on Twitter.
It's good night for me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter as Paul Blurt, and I've got a website, paul-blurt.com.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter as EK6891. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. Plus, you can find us on Twitter at Nerd Podcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. And of course, as I've just said, check out hexdimension.com because there's stuff there that you might find interesting. I know it's a long shot, but if you're listening to this, there's a very good chance you're going to be interested in what's over on Hex.
That's not a long shot at all.
Yeah, what if they really like listening to stuff?
Now you're not speaking English. That's not very good advertising.
Tell you what, someone slips me a fiver, I'll go around to their house and read them the website.
I may have to take you up on that.
Good night.
Night.
Good night.
Good night.